Beware, spoiler phobes. You have stumbled upon a storm of spoilers, a podcast about HBO's Game of Thrones series in conjunction with the Song of Ice and Fire books by George R.R. Martin. This discussion can expand to include any Game of Thrones relevant books, shows, internet extras, special features, teases, trailers, interviews, rumors, guesses, theories, and general crackpotitude. We're not ruining, we're enriching. After all, chaos isn't a pit, it's a ladder. If you do not wish to be spoiled or are not caught up, please stop now.
The realm. Do you know what the realm is? It's the thousand blades of Aegon's enemies. A story we agree to tell each other over and over till we forget that it's a lie.
But what do we have left once we abandon the lie?
Chaos. A gaping pit waiting to swallow us all.
Chaos isn't a pit. Chaos is a ladder. Many who try to climb it fail, never get to try again. The fall breaks them. And some are given a chance to climb, but they refuse. They cling to the realm, or the gods, or love. Illusions. Only the ladder is real. The climb is all there is.
Hello, everyone. My name's Dave Gonzalez, and I haven't read any books in George R.R. Martin's Song of Ice and Fire.
My name's Joanna Robinson. I've read every book in George R.R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire.
And if you are like me, but don't like spoilers, because now that we're living in a world where there isn't any Joffrey, the only true villain is somebody telling you something you don't want to hear. This podcast is not for you. You want to go to GameOfThronesPodcast.com to hear the delightful cast of kings, which only covers the television show. However, I am another Dave that is stolen from Dave Chen, Miss Joanna Robinson, who has read all the books and is so full of book knowledge, and I just got very sad having to watch her sort of squelch it, because I feel like, for me, the way I watch stories, or I guess story time, guys, I was on the set for Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. You could read my coverage at latino-review.com, and that was the night that the Red Wedding aired, so I happened to be in a hotel room, and I got to have some, you know, room service, and I knew what was going to happen because as somebody who's just a fan of story and how stories are told, I don't necessarily think that a spoiler is a bad thing. I think the method of the storytelling is ultimately the more interesting thing. So I saw the Red Wedding, and then I went down into the courtyard of my hotel room and scrolled through Twitter for a good 3 hours watching everybody argue about what was a spoiler of something that just immediately aired because of time shifting and whatnot. So this is a place where we could all get together. There's literally nothing off limits. I'm not afraid of spoilers. Joanna's not afraid of spoilers. If you're afraid of spoilers, you have stepped into our territory, which means you have given up the ability to yell at us. I will not tolerate it. And now it's time to pick up with The Lion and the Rose, which is the episode where Joffrey is poisoned. And I don't know, Joanna, do you want to start right off with the big issue of the whodunit of the episode?
Yeah, I would be delighted. This is so fun and freeing. And I also, I guess I'm just going to add a PS to your spoiler warning, which is that we're going to focus on it, each episode as it airs. But that doesn't mean that we're not going to talk about something that maybe happened in A Dance of Dragons. So if you haven't read all of the books, you know, there's like people on every point of the spoiler spectrum. But all bets are off in this.
So correct.
Through all of the books. I just want to make that crystal, crystal clear, because some people try to like keep pace with the show while reading the book. It's not. Anyway. Yes, the whodunit of this episode. Olenna Tyrell. Mm-hmm. With the necklace crystal in the goblet, I guess, would be the clue breakdown of that. And you had, you know, it's interesting. I've talked about this at length elsewhere, but I got really mad at people pointing this out on the internet, because I actually do consider that a spoiler, to tell people, even though they show it in the episode. And by the nature of, you know, the TV medium, they have to show you things in a more obvious way than you would see it reading the book. But reading the book, it's really not obvious at all. It's very, very subtle. And so, I don't know. What are your thoughts on that, Dave? Like, how do you feel about people talking about it?
I broke it down in a conversation with my Fighting in the War Room podcast hosts off air, and Katie Rich got mad at David Ehrlich and I for spoiling things from the books when we both had to say that no, neither of us have read the books, but the way, because we know how a scene in a television show is structured, you have the scene of her saying, you know, how classless it is for somebody to be killed at their own wedding as she's probably palming, you know, a jewel from Sansa's necklace. And then after that, there's only one character who shares a frame with the goblet, and she's smiling wryly at it, and that is Lady Olenna. So even if somebody who doesn't know the books, who would obviously be looking for like a hairnet if they hadn't caught Two Swords and the interesting, I guess, score spoiler that they did there, where she gets chased down by somebody that ends up being harmless, but they have definitely scored it in a way like something bad's about to happen to Sansa, so she becomes complicit in like this murder plot. I feel like they're laying the pieces as if it were a television show, and just because, you know, I'm like also watching things like Elementary and True Detective doesn't mean that they, you know, should feel bad for being that obvious to me.
Well, my question is, so you figured it out without any book hint whatsoever, or no? You knew the basics, right?
I knew there was poison, or I knew that the theory that the book readers had going into this season was there was poison in the hairnet. And so
Right. Only
knowing that, the necklace felt weird to me, but I don't think it was necessarily something I was spoiled for, because I think that scene was edited to make you feel uneasy.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think even just including a scene with Ser Dantas giving her a necklace last week, when we haven't seen Ser Dantas in a while, seems out of place. Whereas if we had seen Sansa Dantas interactions this entire time, which is what happens in the book, you know, then it doesn't seem as weird. The weirdness that the show skips over is, you know, the flaw in the plot. And I mean, there's a further, I mean, do you care to know who the further conspirator is in the plot, or do you not care?
I don't care about spoilers, Joanna.
All right. All bets are off. So,
well, I mean, I think Baelish, right?
What? Yeah, yeah. It's Lord Baelish. Littlefinger sort of orchestrating things. And so what I was going to say about that is just, you can't have Dantos and Sansa talking every episode. That would be stupid, boring television. But then to have Dantos pop up out of nowhere and be like, here's this necklace. And he didn't even say wear this necklace at the wedding. In the book, he's like, it's important to me that you wear this hairnet at the wedding. It would mean a lot to me. So basically they're just banking that Sansa's going to wear this necklace because of why? You know, that's like a little thing that the show just sort of skipped over.
Yeah, well, that's why he gives the whole spiel about how it's the last vestige of his family, and Sansa, you know, has, as an opposite of Cersei, whenever she feels powerless, she does something unexpectedly nice, right?
Right, no, absolutely. I mean, as Littlefinger, as a, you know, a scholar of human nature, could expect that Sansa would do that, but it's not guaranteed, right?
So, right. I mean, let me ask you the question.
That was a little flaw in their plan, according to the show logic. Anyway, so it happened. I thought they filmed it really well. I agree with you that, you know, they did a lot of shots on Lady Olenna, but they also did some shots on Oberyn, on Varys, on like a bunch of different people looking a little shifty at the wedding. So I think if someone isn't spoiled at all and avoids the internet, they might still be trying to figure it out.
I mean, I think just by the nature of having all the pieces, I mean, George R. R. Martin's adaptation of his own chapter put all the same pieces there, I would assume, because he felt like he knew they were going to use them later. But the way it came out when it was shot is this was shot like a mystery. Right. And they even have like the double tension where if you've read the book, you know what's coming. And if you haven't read the book, you're just worried that Tyrion's going to be like beheaded in front of, you know, the entire wedding. And then it sort of seems like, just to end on that, oh my gosh, like the reaction that they wanted the audience is, I have to see that again. And if the audience saw it again, to me, they're being broadcast what it is. So I'm going to be very interested to see if the next episode, if they just sort of dismiss the mystery fast because it's less interesting than the dozens of other characters who have interesting things to do.
Maybe, but I mean, it is kind of it's a kind of interesting and intricate plot. And the way it's revealed, it's not even fully revealed until the next book. And so, I don't know. But you're right, that in terms of like all the shit that happens on the show, it's not the most fascinating thing to focus on.
I'm glad
we have this safe space where we can talk about spoilers. I really am. But I think you and I have like a slightly different view of what constitutes a spoiler and what doesn't. And so it's good that we are here where we can both agree that whatever it is we say, it's safe. So there we go.
Yeah. I mean, see, the interesting thing for me is I'm definitely a fan of if the book's good, stay close to the book.
Yeah.
But I think it's weird when we have a situation like this where both things are good that you could choose very specifically where you're going to differentiate. And for me, it's not interesting to make it a mystery because I've never thought of this show as a mystery show, or I don't think that this show would operate really well as a mystery show because already you're trying to tease history out of every monologue because there can't be any flashbacks, and family tree out of every monologue because people have nicknames and sigils and whatnot. And so it seems like to then add, is this person lying or not about killing it, would just be a lot easier knowing that Tyrion's innocent and feeling for, you know, the injustice that's going to befall him and whatnot.
Well, I mean, they did have that mystery plot of who tried to murder Bran.
Well, yeah, you know? I mean, and there's also the mystery plot of who poisoned Jon Arryn. But if you ask anybody to describe season one, even though it is a mystery of who killed Jon Arryn and they're revealing the incest, no one describes it like that.
They don't? No, you're right, they don't. Okay. They're like, I don't know, some lady walked into a fire and then there were dragons. So
yeah, and then like the hero dude lost his head. And that, speaking of, in terms of bringing things from books closer together because it's a TV show, this is something that occurred to me because we didn't get to talk about Two Swords, but have they just exchanged Arya for our Joffrey in terms of our mini psychopath? Are we now going to see the good version of a mini psychopath?
It could. I think Arya is just a little more nuanced than that, you know? I don't think she's full psychopath, and that's a much more interesting character. I think we'll see in this season some acts of charity from her. I think she still believes in the basic tenets of the Stark house. She's just existing in a different world where she does what she needs to do in order to survive and have her, you know, vengeance. But no, she's not even a touch on Joffrey. I think if you want a psychopath, you can look at Ramsay Snow and enjoy that instead, you know?
Yeah, but it's so much cooler when they're little babies.
That's true.
I have some questions that I don't know will even have interesting answers, but here we go. What are we gaining by having Jaime in King's Landing so early?
Yeah, I thought about this. Someone asked me this for the other podcast and I couldn't answer. I guess my answer is it will make sense later when he is more on Team Tyrion for him to bear witness to Joffrey being such a monster. I think it'll make Jaime's allegiances a little bit more understandable because Cersei can appeal to him saying like, this is our son, avenge our son, be on my side. And even though we know that Jaime likes Tyrion, I think the expectation would be if he left in season one, being, you know, the utter cock that he was in season one, if he left in season one and didn't see his son until his son was dead, I think it would be a different decision for him. But for him to come back, you know, a bit of a changed man from his adventure, and then, you know, have Joffrey treat him miserably, and then see Joffrey at his absolute worst at this wedding, I think Jaime's motivations are going to be a little bit more understandable. Does that make sense?
Yes. I mean, do you think that he's going to relive the Joffrey's death moment and see Cersei's madness at pointing at his other brother, you know, all of a sudden after Joffrey's hasn't even, you know, been dead for a minute?
I'm sorry, what do you mean by that?
Is it more important that he bonded with Tyrion over, like, the breakfast conversation where, you know, the gimp, the dwarf, and the mother of madness? Or was it just him being there, having that, you know, sort of you came back too late conversation with Cersei, and then seeing Cersei's madness of interpreting, like, Joffrey's finger pointing to immediately arrest her brother.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right that it's important that he bear witness, but also I think for the storytelling point of view of the show, it was good to have those scenes establishing who is actually the kinder sibling to him, you know, and where his allegiances should naturally lie, with Cersei being so horrid to him and with Tyrion being so lovely to him. It'll make sense, I think, going forward with the trial.
Nice. So semi-related, what are we gaining by having Brienne walking around King's Landing at this point? Obviously a showdown with Cersei, which was excellent.
I don't know. That's interesting. I don't know. I think probably just because they're a match set. So if you bring Jaime early, you have to bring Brienne early. But I can't see the far-reaching ripples of that. I do have Shay thoughts, though, if you want to talk about Shay.
Oh, yeah. We should totally get to Shay.
All right.
I mean, I'm just I'm resisting because that character hasn't, I don't think, played as well as everybody thinks she should have all three seasons. I don't know what necessarily happened, but something about that performance never clicked with me. But by all means, let's talk about her horrible fate she almost escaped from this week.
Well, I think I don't know what they were going for, I guess, is my answer there. Like, I don't know what they're going for. Except to say in this episode, with that very ham-fisted scene between her and Tyrion, her motivations are going to be clear. It's not just going to be that Tywin paid her. It's, you know, maybe the story they're trying to tell is a more tragic one. Maybe we're meant to believe that she really did care about him. And since he basically threw rocks at her and told her to go away, then her betrayal is just going to be more poignant, I guess, rather than she was just a scheming whore this entire time.
Maybe I'm just the man in this situation that requires more male and feminine balance, but it seems like I have a similar problem with some stuff that happens towards the end of season 2 of House of Cards, which I'll talk about very vaguely because I guess we can't spoil everything on our spoiler show. But it's like, if you're in a situation where you say, you know, you need to do this or he's going to kill you, like, I'm not sure what the miscommunication is, especially by someone who's been living in King's Landing for as long as she has. Like, how is Love Still Conquers All a valuable argument after, if you do not leave now, he's going to kill you and there's nothing I could do about it?
I'm not defending Shay. I don't think it's correct to call that, like, the woman's stance or anything like that, but I think she's a nonsense character. She's a nonsense character. She hasn't made any sense. And I really like that actress. And she's been insufferable in this. And I can only imagine that they were trying to make her insufferable, but that doesn't make any sense. Because why would you waste one of your best actors, Peter Dinklage, with a scene partner who is so grating? I did have a thought about this.
Yeah.
Maybe it's really important to them that we're very much on Tyrion's side. Maybe they need us to have someone who's more heroic than the book presents. And so when he chokes her and kills her, maybe we really need to be okay with him doing that. And so if you have her be a more sympathetic character, maybe we wouldn't be able to side with Tyrion when he does what he does.
Interesting. So it's like the reverse of what a TV show usually does, which is just trying to humanize a character the episode before they kill them. Game of Thrones is actually trying to be like, oh, wait, all this time you tried to care about Shay, you could throw that away now.
I know you tried, you failed, it didn't work, so we're just going to go fully horrible, make her horrible, and then make her death a simpler choice for everyone.
Yeah.
They have to make it a little cleaner, the morality a little cleaner than they make it in the books, you know? And that's too bad because the books are so great for their murky characters left and right. But I think the medium of TV, mainstream HBO, demands something a little more conventional, I guess.
Do you think this is the first sign of that being a reoccurring problem as we plunge into these middling books that take place at the same time with each other?
My hope is that I think they've done an excellent job so far. Like, I don't think that it's a huge problem. And I'm really hoping that they are going to do a great job just plucking out the most interesting things out of the rather dreary book that's to come. And I have faith in them that they can do that. Absolutely. But it might also be that, you know, who knows in what degree HBO intervenes? Like, what if they pitch to HBO, okay, yeah, all right, so everyone likes Peter Dinklage, but, you know, he's going to kill the woman that he's been sleeping with in this upcoming episode. And what if HBO is like, no, you can't do that, you know, or we have a problem with that. Can you make it softer? Something like that. Do you know? So
yeah, I mean, it's interesting because on one hand, if this were season two, I'd say that no way would HBO even dare to do that because this is the show that started off with the pilot that everybody said was a mess and ended by killing its main character and sort of resurrecting itself from this, maybe I'll watch this new HBO period show. But like now, I guess I'm not exactly sure because it is large, but it is also a franchise. And I'm not sure if television is necessarily ready for the moral complex. It's at this weird point because if HBO was willing to do as many seasons as it took to tell the story, I'd say by all means stop touching stuff. But very quickly we're going to start running up against like the age of actors and 10 episodes per season and shooting in 14 countries. And are we really going to go all the way to like Morocco or something so we could watch, you know, Daenerys be depressed for months?
They better do something really good with that, I have to say, because season two Daenerys is so boring, and book two Daenerys has got nothing on the later books Daenerys. So I don't know what they're gonna do. Like, she's only got a few interesting things left to do, and Emilia Clarke is such a popular actress, a popular character. So yeah, it's pretty rough. And Arya too. Like, I don't quite know what they're gonna do with Arya. She's got some stretches of not doing anything coming up, so we'll see. They might go completely off the map and it'll be interesting. So
we'll end on one big picture question I have for you, which is there ever a place in Game of Thrones where they start doing flashbacks?
Like in the books or the show or what?
Well, in the books obviously they're in there, but in the show the only way we get exposition is through, you know, Daenerys goes into some weird dream hallucination and we get to see the bombed out Iron Throne or someone touches a weeping willow. But there's so much history in Westeros, and with George R. R. Martin talking about like we could do a prequel season or we could do Dunkin' Egg episodes every once in a while. Is there going to be some point where they're just like, we have these actors, we have this story, you're writing these books, we're going to have to break what we've called the structure of this show and allow some characters some flashbacks?
No, I don't think they're going to do that. But what I have pitched before is that there should be like in between the seasons, I think they should do like something that's beautifully animated. Not like maybe like the Animatrix, but more I was thinking of that sequence in Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows. And they should do some of the knights, like the background knights tales, like the Knight of the Laughing Tree is one of my favorite stories. They're never going to get to that in the show. And it's so juicy and so tangentially related to the story that I think it could be really popular if HBO did in between the series something animated. That's my pitch. HBO should listen to me and do that. So
yeah. Are you talking about like the history of the houses on the first season DVD that's like narrated by the actors and very nicely animated?
But more dynamic. Because there are stories that are just more dynamic than that, than just like the history. Does that make sense?
Yes. So you're saying like, yeah, you are pitching an Animatrix. You're pitching an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s Animatrix.
Yes.
I'd be all for it. All I know is that the first time I ever got yelled at for a Game of Thrones spoiler that wasn't really a spoiler, someone was like, how do you think it's going to end? And I'm like, it's called A Song of Ice and Fire. It's probably going to be Jon and Dany. And they're like, oh my God, you spoiled the books. And I'm like, oh my God, really? And now I'm wondering, like, all of that, both of those, like, family lines and who's Jon Snow's mom and all that, that's all in the past. When are we going to go back and dig into that good story?
Well, we had like a, you know, little droplets of it when Oberyn was talking to Tyrion. They planted the first seed there when he talks about how Rhaegar ran off with a woman and that's what started the war. Right. And, you know, since I you know, ascribe to the belief that Jon Snow is the bastard child of Lyanna Stark and Rhaegar Targaryen. Like, I think that they are going to get there. It's just going to be in stories. But since Ned's dead, I don't know who else knows this. I guess maybe Bran can have visions. They have cast the Three-Eyed Crow, so Bran's going to have a lot more visions. So there's, I don't know. That's an option, I guess, instead of flashbacks. You're right. Dream sequences and visions. There's got to be some kind of payoff. But no, I don't think they'll ever do flashbacks. I just can't see it happening.
Interesting. I guess the only way I could see it happening is if the show takes like a dip in ratings and George R. R. Martin hasn't finished anything and doesn't allow them to finish, and they throw a Hail Mary pass to Sean Bean and he's like, I'm not doing anything this year.
No, he's got a show coming up. It's going to be great on TNT.
Maybe he lives through this one.
Maybe. But I don't know why they wouldn't do inter-season side stories. You know, that George R. R. Martin writes and maybe someone else show runs so that, you know, Weiss and Benioff can have a break. But, like, given how popular this show is and given how much story they're not even going to use in the series, why wouldn't they do that? And the reason I'm lobbying, you know, voting for animated is just to sort of make it distinct, make it its own thing, so that if it's not as quite as good as the live action show, we wouldn't be comparing it so much. And, you know, it seems like a sure thing to me, but, you know, HBO hasn't listened to me yet, so I'll just keep talking about it.
Yeah, and the core show keeps costing more and more, so I don't know where they're going to get this money that you're assuming animated things come from. But I guess that could be a continuing conversation. Each week we could learn a little bit about animation, maybe. Who knows? I think
that... And then at the end we'll have our pitch ready for HBO to be like, okay, we're going to make this series. Give us $1 million.
No,
like
Weiss that? And Benioff never made a TV series. You and I have never made a TV series, but we both seem to be equally as educated on the making of TV series. I think that, you know, we're making our executive producer pitch right now.
I think it's a surefire hit. Absolutely.
Well, anything else that we need to pick up from these first two episodes of season four of Game of Thrones?
Well, I don't know. Did we want to talk about Theon stuff at all?
Ooh, do you want to talk about Theon stuff? One of the greatest moments of listening to the cast of Kings, by the way, is when you made David say the Theon plot reeked before he got his new name.
Oh my god. That was maybe my best moment, topped only by being quiet 2 weeks ago when Dave said maybe the crystals are poison or something like that.
Oh yeah,
like,
that was awesome.
Without
funny.
Any knowledge, he dropped that, and I was just like,
He's really the evidence that there are no spoilers. It is Dave Chen stumbles into so much stuff, barely led by you. I don't think you're force feeding him anything. But yes, let's talk about Theon, and I don't know. It looks like with him leaving the Dreadfort, we might have a whole nother season of him getting shat upon.
Well, I think they've established him as already broken. He's broken in, so I don't know that we're gonna see a lot more psychological damage. I guess just the advisability of bringing his plot here, the here and now. I'm all for it. Like, I don't know that they handled it perfectly last season, but I'm all for the Theon plot coming out of the last book and into this one.
I guess the only reason I would be all for it is outside of the reality that Alfie Allen's just a regular on the cast, and so therefore you can't cut him out of episodes, or all the episodes. But I guess it's good just in the sense that the way Theon was treated in the first two seasons of the show, if he were to suddenly show up as Reek, I don't think that would work. So in that sense, I'm happy that we're tracking it. I'm not sure... I don't know. I don't know what sort of long view they had, if they were willing to, you know, let Theon basically go out as his high point and then get a bag put over his head, and that's sort of like the end of his happy life. That seemed abrupt. I don't know. It depends. It depends a lot on how I feel about the show once Reek becomes a key player again.
Right, and from what we've seen in this episode, I'm more optimistic than I had been. I just thought Alfie Allen was so great, and seeing him compared to seeing him in season one and season two, I just think he's fantastic. And I think the show does need that psychopath in Ramsay Snow for us to rally around someone to hate. So I think it's worthwhile bringing it forward.
Yeah. I also didn't hate all of his torturing last season. I think this show needs to constantly remind us that it's a bleak world and that it's based on our world, because the only thing that we don't have are White Walkers and dragons, which aren't the things doing horrible things to people. So it's like stuff like Arya and the Hound, you know, riding through a smoky landscape and the Game of Thrones theme rising. I'm like, yes, that's the show. I dig it. This is a history of how human nature, you know, acts across even fantasy realities. And so I didn't mind if every once in a while we had to stop looking at the Rob and Talisa falling in love storyline and had to see someone's penis get off, because that's the reality we're living in, people.
Well, the Theon stuff makes me think about, I was talking to Scott Beggs from Film School Rejects about his theory about when Lady Stoneheart will appear, and I'm assuming that you know about the Lady Stoneheart stuff.
Yeah, I'm surprised that they mentioned her at all in Two Swords, because I thought they were going to shirk that off till much later, but yeah, that she was thrown in the river.
Yeah. I feel like that's where the season's going to end, that our last shot, that like episode 9 is going to be the battle at Castle Black. I think that's established. Neil Cross is directing it, et cetera. And then episode 10 is going to be Catelyn, you know, her
taking
resurrection.
Revenge.
Scott from Film School Rejects thinks that they're going to be, like how they do in the book, they're going to have whispers of Lady Stoneheart and the legend of Lady Stoneheart and then reveal her much later. Like next season, maybe. And I don't think they can do that, because that's sort of like, you know, the Theon stuff. I think viewers would object to that. And I think that they would much rather see her be resurrected from the river, you know?
Well, I would disagree with you, but in a show where we don't do flashbacks, I would like to see her resurrected from the river.
Right.
So it's like, I mean, I think there's something great in a whispered storyline of a person that's like a person avenging the Starks after the War of the Five Kings, I think could really work. But knowing that if we don't see her resurrected from the river, we'll never see her resurrected from the river, I'd rather just get that over with and not have a monologue through, like, I don't know, whisper voice or a translator about what the fuck happened. That just seems like a dramatically dead scene to me.
Well, exactly. And no, I agree. In the book, it's great. Like, in the way it's done in the book is great, but I just don't think that's how they're going to do it in the show. So, and it's funny. Oh, so something that happened to me this week is I was in contact with HBO because I wanted to sort of maybe lock down some of the actors who are going to be dying this year for interviews, you know, so I
day after
that, like, go
interviews,
up, like, right after
yeah.
the episode aired. Did I tell you about this already?
No. Please go ahead.
Oh, just that I spoiled the HBO agent by listing all the names. And in listing all the names, I realized how many people are going to die this season. I don't know why I hadn't really thought about that. But, you know, you've got Ygritte, and you've got Tywin, you've got Shay, and you've got Oberyn, and I'm sure I'm forgetting someone. And it's a lot. It's a lot in one season. And it's going to be a great season, and then I don't know what they're going to do next year, so...
Yeah, we're all going to be floating around, and I can't control my dragons because they're huge.
Or, like, you know, Bravosi bank politics. I don't know. It's going to be interesting.
Hey, man, I'm always for bank politics.
And I love what they're doing with Oberyn, and I love how everyone's falling in love with him. And I'm kind of encouraging that. I honestly, I love that character. I think the actor who's playing him is great. But I also think everyone will feel that turn much more keenly if they fall quickly in love with him. So
definitely, you know, things if our little podcast experiment continues, I know we'll be talking about or Oberyn, and I think in the future we'll be talking more about recasting of Tommen and what they're going to do with that situation, because, you know, otherwise Marjorie's going to be committing some on-screen pedophilia.
Well, no, I mean, they already recast him, and so he's at least 16, so there's that.
Well, but I mean, like, you know, are they saying he's 16? And that, we'll look, this is going to come to a head. We could talk about it then. Yeah, let's end this with talking about where people could find our non-Game of Thrones things on the internet. Miss Joanna Robinson.
That's perfect. I write over at vanityfair.com, or you can follow me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This.
I'm Dave Gonzalez. I spell my first name DA70, which is also my Twitter handle, and I cover superhero movie news at latino-review.com and do a podcast called Fighting in the War Room at fightinginthewarroom.com, which is where you will find these episodes embedded in that feed. So hopefully we'll be back next week with a storm of spoilers.